produced by Jeffrey Chryselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 410. What did they do next? Part 8A, Squire and White.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 410 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host, Mark Anthony Kay, will be along a little bit later on. Please do get involved yourself with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I begin to consider what happened when the band essentially split up a short time after the drama tour ended, almost exactly 39 years ago, in December 1980. So we have the chance to see what each member of the band did next, and we're starting with Alan White and Chris Squire. More on that later. Around the social webs this week, on Facebook, I shared Dave Watkinson's post about him signing the hardback copies of his new book, John Anderson and the Warriors, The Road to Yes. They're all sold out now, and Burning Shed is sending them out very soon indeed. If you've missed out this time, the paperback version will be available next year, and the link to pre-order is on the YMP Facebook page. Very exciting and great to hear that the hardbacks have all been sold. Well done, Dave. Mark posted a photo of his copy of Rick Wakeman's The Family Album, which apparently features songs describing each of his family members. Interesting idea. And Mark also added a special offer on his own albums. On the Yes Fans Ireland page, Dave Fagan added the first clip from the forthcoming David Cross and Peter Banks album, Crossover, which sounds great, and look out for more on that album in January here on the YMP. Mark and Rick Messina posted Relayer-related items. Mark started a conversation about the album, and Rick shared himself introducing Patrick Mraz playing the opening of Sound Chaser as a Christmas gift to fans. That's one you really need to see, and even does a slightly tidier version in the comments on the post. Sounds amazing. In the visitor posts, old friend Geoffrey Mason added items about Rick Wakeman discussing his new Christmas album on the BBC Steve Wright show, a photo gallery of the June 1976 solo album's tour concert in Boston Garden, the inclusion of From a Page in a holiday gift guide, a review of John Anderson contributing to another new song, this time by Battle Juice B. Crypts. Is that right? A sneak peek at John Anderson's interview on the Big Interview Show, an interview with Rick in grumpy mode, and the Prog Archives review of Elias of Sunhillo. Wow. Not to be outdone, though, Doug Curran added several screenshots from that Big Interview Show of John, his family, and archive photos, and Bob Keeley tells us about his recent viewing of Like It Is. His verdict? It's a video without a beginning or end, and feels incomplete. Over on Twitter, I had a couple of conversations with various members of the Wakeman clan, and one of those will be featured later in this episode. So, many thanks to everyone who got in touch in any way this week. And now, on with the show.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
So I'm back this week properly, as it were, with Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. Good to be back.
Yes, indeed. So how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How about you?
Not too bad at all, thank you very much. All right, so we're talking about the next characters to leave the band, and we have quite a cast to choose from this week. So we thought we'd start off with Chris Squire and Alan White and what they did after the drama set up sort of disbanded. And just to get us going on this, I thought I'd read the account of the end of that lineup from Dave Watkinson's fantastic book, Perpetual Change. I'm keeping my fingers crossed for an updated version of this one day. And if I can see it with my almost 50-year-old eyes, let's see. So he says, during the drama tour, rumours began circulating in the press of problems. Sounds reported on 13th December 1980. Gosh, that's...
Tomorrow.
That, yes, we're about to split up because of major differences, which the band's office in London dismissed as absolute rubbish. This has a lot of parallels to politicians, in a way. Come the beginning of 1981, nobody was really sure of the destiny of Yes Remembers Steve Howe. We had a meeting and the egg sort of cracked on the floor. And it ended up that really only Jeff and I were sitting there saying, well, I think I'm still in Yes. I haven't left. I haven't been fired or axed by anybody. So that's what happened. Jeff and I sort of felt, can we carry on with Yes? And I thought, God, I've been doing this for a long time, trying to work out how the group continues. I said, no, Jeff, you do the Buggles, and I'm going to take a short break. But within a couple of weeks, I'd realised that we couldn't resurrect this. We couldn't piece this back together. It really cracked wide open. So we started on the next project. So, as planned, Atlantic released another attempt at an elusive hit single, Run Through the Light, paired with White Car in January 1981. Unfortunately, this failed also. And then, a few months after the tour, and after much soul-searching, everyone agreed that they couldn't maintain Yes in its current form. Long-term manager Brian Lane was fired, and it seemed that technically Yes were dead. An official announcement came through that Yes had finally broken up. At this time, the split seemed irreparable. Chris and Alan tested their resolve, however, to see whether they could rescue anything from their long partnership within Yes. A few months after the demise of the band, they began working on new material with Jimmy Page, until recently the guitarist of Led Zeppelin. They had spoken about the possibility of working together and arranged a meeting in Chris Squire's home studio in his house in Virginia Water. Over the next 2 months, the threesome created a sound that married a powerful rock backing to an eastern feel, similar to Led Zeppelin's Kashmir. The former vocalist of Led Zeppelin, Robert Plant, was going to contribute to the sessions, but since the death in 1980 of Zeppelin's drummer John Bonham, he'd been unable to put his heart into an outside musical project, this one carrying the provisional title of XYZ or X Yes Zeppelin. The press got hold of the story celebrating the formation of the new supergroup, but with Plant out of the picture, Page's interest waned and the project came to an end before it had really started. Interestingly, the record company denied all knowledge of the XYZ sessions, presumably keeping it under wraps until something concrete came of it. But by the end of XYZ, it heralded a new beginning for Chris and Alan. Retaining their enthusiasm, the pair carried on writing and playing together. They collaborated with friends Pete Seinfeld, lyricist Greg Lake, singer, and Andrew Jackman, arranger, who had previously worked with Yes, as well as with the choir of St. Paul's on a single recorded at Psalm Studios, that's Trevor Horns, isn't it, in October 1981. Released for the Christmas market, Run With The Fox received only minimal radio play and subsequently sank without trace. The only Yes product released that year was the compilation album Classic Yes in December, featuring another Roger Dean cover. It contained an inspired selection of the best of Yes from the early 1970s. So, there we are. Fascinating stuff. So, XYZ, and obviously Squire and White wanted to work together. They didn't, I suppose, if they'd had it their way, the band would have actually kept going. So, XYZ then, Mark. Everyone loves a supergroup, but Led Zeppelin isn't Yes, although they certainly have some prog influences over some of their songs. But did you think this was going to be a good combination, and especially if they could get Robert Plant involved?
Well, I was never really too into this. Like, I had heard about this much, you know, I guess later in my Yes, you know, getting into Yes. And then I discovered this whole, like, legend of the XYZ business. And to me, it just seemed like something very odd. I mean, Jimmy Page is just not a kind of guitar player I think of when I think of a progressive guitar player. No. He seems very much more blues influenced, very much more rock and roll influenced. Yeah. And while, you know, Robert Plant is a fantastic singer, again, he comes off to me as more of a bluesier guy, not really very creative as a John Anderson would be vocally, I don't think. I mean, I may get, you know, eggs thrown at me for saying that, but I really don't think that he has the same vision vocally as John Anderson does. So to me, it just seemed like an interesting side project. When I first heard about it, I kind of envisioned something that would have been a lot more straight rock and roll and not so progressive.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting what you say about Plant particularly. And as you say, it's not exactly John Anderson or even Trevor Horn at that time. So, and he decided not to join the group. And on Wikipedia, it says that he cited his dislike for the complexity of the music. So perhaps you're absolutely right in what you said. And because he was still deeply hurt by the recent death of John Bonham, of course. Now, someone who's almost always overlooked when we think about XYZ is Dave Lawson, who's a former Greenslade keyboard player and vocalist. So he was involved as well, apparently. What do you know about Greenslade? It's not a band. I know that they had a Roger Dean album cover, but that's frankly all I know about Greenslade.
Actually, I know very little. I mean, until I started diving deep into this with you, I didn't even know about this gentleman. So once again, this is going to be another thing for me to, you know, look into and, you know, maybe try to search out some music on YouTube. And if I like it, hey, Discogs, here I come. Maybe I'll buy a vinyl.
Absolutely. If you know more than we do about Dave Lawson and Greenslade, do let us know. I'm sure there are plenty of you out there listening who know a lot about that. So it certainly was a prog-leaning selection that we've got on the demos, which are available pretty much everywhere now, of XYZ. And some bits, of course, made it onto Keys to Ascension and elsewhere. And here's another bit from Wikipedia, which is interesting. It's unclear what of the XYZ material made it to 90125, but White said in a 2008 interview that those were the beginnings of some songs that ended up on the next Yes album anyway. White also confirmed the XYZ material was used on 90125 in a 2012 interview. So that was fascinating. And another one that I'd forgotten about as well was Can You See by XYZ, resurfaced as Can You Imagine on Magnification, which is a song I really rather like. But 90125, I'm going to have to listen very carefully to see if I can hear anything from the demos that we've got of that turns up on 90125. It doesn't seem the same sort of music at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I listen to these songs, I mean, obviously Mind Drive was very familiar. Of course, though, it's a very basic and very long and drawn out version of it. It's just essentially one part played over and over and over and over and over again. I mean, how they expected to make a song out of just that, I don't know. But that would have been a real snooze fest if it was left like that. But can you imagine? That was very interesting to hear the very early versions of that with Chris singing on it. And you could tell that he was very early in his writing of it, because some of the fantastic melodies that he came up with for on the Magnification album with it weren't really developed yet at this point. I just like you, though, I don't really hear much of 90125 at all in this stuff. So what it is that this stuff developed into, I think I'm gonna have to do another real deep dive and maybe put the headphones on and, you know, try to see if you can really pick out where these beginnings are in these four songs.
I mean, Jimmy Page has always been quoted as saying that he one day will do something with the tapes and rework these and release them, but we'll see if that ever happens. It hasn't certainly happened as yet, and particularly around the time of the death of Chris, he said that he ought to go back and get those tapes out, but nothing has happened as yet. And yeah, it's interesting, isn't it, what you say about Jimmy Page. Now, I can't say I'm an expert on the whole of his catalogue, but again, he's not a Trevor Rabin, is he? So Trevor Rabin came along next and took the band in a different direction, but it was a more modern, and of course when Trevor Horn got there, it turned into a very much more modern sounding rock outfit than anything on the XYZ material.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think Trevor took it to a whole new level. And I think also Trevor Horn needs to be given a bunch of credit to that as well, because he took, you know, the stuff and turned it into a production that to this day sounds fantastic on radio and other places. So it has aged tremendously well compared to other stuff in the 80s. Yeah. So I think that they're definitely needed to be given some props for that sort of stuff.
Definitely. Okay, so have a listen to the XYZ demos. I'll put the YouTube link on the show notes for this week and let us know what you think of it next week. And then they went on to Run With The Fox. Now, you probably know, if you've ever listened to the YMP, certainly if you've been listening for over a year, then I always start listening to Run With The Fox on the 1st of December each year, and it's a bit of tradition. And I heard from my son, who's currently off at university, that he's inducted other people into that tradition now. So he gets Run With The Fox out, and he's got other people to do it as well. So everyone I've played it to really rather likes it. And there was even, I ran a Patreon of our patrons, a little poll, and Run With The Fox certainly came out at the top of the Yes or Yes related Christmas songs. So what I was very puzzled about why it didn't do better. I suppose it just didn't get the backing it needed. It wasn't played on the radio enough. But for me, it has all the classic elements of a classic Christmas single. So it's got that classical tune from Prokofiev, I think, and there's a choir in there. It's a catchy number, fun, it's joyful. And of course, other prog artists have had great success with Christmas singles, certainly in the UK. So there's Greg Lake himself, who had a massive hit. And other people like Chris de Burgh, who was a prog artist of sorts at times. And, of course, Mike Oldfield as well had a great Christmas single. So what do you think went wrong?
Again, I think you probably hit the nail on the head as far as record label non-backing. I think that has a lot to do with it, especially back in those days. I mean, the bands were expected to just make the music, and the record labels always kind of said, you know, our territory is to make it known to everybody, so let us take care of that end of it. And obviously, if they don't push it, then it's not going to get to the ears that you want to, and for people to notice it. And I think the other thing is that, and I'll be totally honest with you, for the longest time, I never really realized this was a Christmas song. Like, I'm talking about years back, like when I first heard this, I never associated this song with Christmas until I kind of really dug deeper into it and started, you know, analyzing lyrics a bit more. Because back then, I was all about the music and I didn't really care about lyrics too much. And then once I started realizing, hey, this is geared toward Christmas, it really became a song that I liked very much, because I'm a big Christmas guy. I love Christmas. So it has become something for me as well. Ever since I heard you doing that, I thought it was a great idea. And I pull out my 7-inch 45 of Run With The Fox and play it now in December. And I think that the problem also is that I don't think that it was ever really pushed as, like, you know, the ex-Yes member's Christmas song. I just always thought it was just pushed out as, like, just another single. So I think that if it would have been pushed as a proper Christmas song, things might have been different.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we won't get too deeply into the music itself, because we'll leave that for next week when we listen intently to all these that we're talking about. And it was lovely to see the 7-inch version of it on the Fish Out of Water box set, which came out, what was it, a year ago, a couple of years ago? That was great to have an actual 7-inch single of that. And of course, we've got Squire himself on the lead vocals. I think he does a wonderful job, but again, we won't talk about it too much. And Alan White, of course. Alan White, who allegedly does backing vocals very unusually, and the boys of St. Paul's Cathedral Choir. And that was because Barry Rose was the choir master that both Andrew Price Jackman and Chris Squire sang with in their choir boy days. And by the time that they recorded this, he'd moved on to St. Paul's Cathedral. And so they gave him a call, and he got the boys of St. Paul's Cathedral in to do those wonderful choir backing vocals. And I mentioned Andrew Price Jackman because, of course, he did all the orchestration on Chris Squire's Swiss Choir, which is the album that has this song on it, although there was nothing to do with the album when it was originally produced, I understand. And Andrew Price Jackman was also responsible for the string, well, orchestral arrangement on Onward, on Tomato. So being a very old friend of Chris Squire, it was a fantastic combination of those two as well. So the B-side is Return of the Fox. And that's, I looked this up again, preparation for this, and I had forgotten completely that it was co-written by King Crimson member Peter Seinfeld. And it features Dave Lawson, again, we just talked about before, ex-Greenslade, on the XYZ stuff, and Chris's wife, then-wife, Nikki, on backing vocals. So quite a collection of friends and big names on the B-side, although I have to say I think the B-side is not anything like as good as the A-side.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, essentially, isn't the B-side just like a same thing, but instead of using vocals, they they kind of made like a melody that mimicked the lead vocal part.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's almost like an elevator version of it in some ways. Like, you know, if you're waiting in, or the dentist waiting room version of Run with the Fox. But it is interesting, though, how many people they had involved in that version of it. You know, I'm hoping that they maybe also were involved maybe in the original one a little bit. But the thing that they were involved in the one that was, you know, less impactful seems rather humorous.
It does, yeah. Get some real big names in for the B-side. Anyway, okay, so what I also love, of course, and I'll let you into a secret that I'm currently learning the bass part of Run with the Fox because I love it so much. And, of course, I always use Miguel Falcao's bass cover version of it because I can see all the Squire trademarks that Miguel shows off on that as well, which is fantastic. Okay, so there's another thing to listen to between now and next week when we talk about it in much more detail. So do you like it? We're doing this at the right time of year, of course, because this is going out in December 2019. So let us know what you think on the show notes for this week, and we'll perhaps read some of those comments out next week when we get to it. So for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrine.
So we're on now to Two Pence, and this time it comes from Daniel Crone. In celebration of his recent birthday, we couldn't do it the week that he sent it in, but we're doing it now, and Mark is still with me. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin.
So this is what Daniel says. As it's my birthday, I have a Two Pence for you and Mark. And here it is. Should Oliver, Wakeman that is, have included a live version of Aliens from the 2008 tour on From a Page, or would it have been too jarring to go from one live song to four studio songs? So Aliens, if you don't know, is a Chris Squire song, which they did live, which did live with him on lead vocals and Benoit David on backing vocals, and of course Oliver Wakeman playing the keyboards. 28 times they played it live during 2008 and one in 2009. Then subsequently it was reworked by Chris Squire with Steve Hackett for the Squacket version for that album. And actually I listened to that again today and I enjoyed it a lot more than I did previously. I thought it was a bit funny, a bit odd on the Squacket version, but now that I listen to it again, I think it's rather good and quite Yes-y. And I still find the sort of refrain of it a bit silly because it's Aliens Are Only Us from the Future. But once I get over that, I think the vocals are wonderful on the Squacket version, certainly. Not quite as good on the YouTube videos you can find, but then again, that's not fair because it's not properly mixed and so on. And there are loads of soaring guitars on it from Hackett. And so an interesting piece. We'll get back into the detail of it. But what do you think of the song itself, Mark?
When I first heard it from the Yes side of the camp there when they were doing it, and I thought it was a little odd. It sounded like unfinished. Mm. Like I knew it almost seemed like they were desperate to bring out something new for the tour. And even though they knew that they didn't have this completely to the point of where they probably wanted it to be, they wanted to just play it just to have something new in their repertoire. I thought I had that feeling of it. But when I listened to the Squacket version, I think it turned out really fantastic. I think they did a great job with it. And if they would have, you know, brought it back into their set list years later, I think it would have came across even better live.
Yeah, yeah. So this was exactly the right time. They went on then to produce in the studio the four songs, at least, if not some others as well, which made it onto From a Page very recently. And then they were shelved, of course, at the time, as we heard from Oliver himself when they went on to Fly From Here. So certainly it was a piece of music, a song which was in the repertoire of the band at the time, and another one that didn't make it onto Fly From Here. Now, I wanted to ask Oliver whether they actually did a version of it in the studio, with him playing, of course, and Chris Squire doing the main vocals. So I've asked him on Twitter, so we'll see. Give you an update if he gets back to us and say, see whether it was actually attempted in the studio. I'll just break into the conversation here with the contents of my subsequent Oliver Wakeman conversation. I said, "Hi Oliver, still getting compliments about your interview. One question, was Aliens ever tried out in the studio? The Squacket version is rather good." He responded, glad the interview was okay for people, great fun to chat. No, we never recorded anything with aliens at all. We just played it on the first tour, only after which it became a Squacket track. I replied, okay, thanks for that. Is it a song you like? And Oliver said, yes, but I would have liked to have had more time for us to have worked on it, a bit more as a band. But Chris really wanted it to be included in the first live shows to give the fans something new to hear. I did find the demo version Chris sent me a few days ago. So another amazing yes coincidence. Number several billion. But why do you think it? Do you think it just wasn't fully fleshed out, and they didn't feel like putting it on Fly From Here?
Yeah, I'm thinking that that's probably the case. I mean, I had the same thought. Like when I read the question from Daniel, I thought to myself, who's to say that there isn't a studio version of this lurking around, right? And if there was, the one reason why they wouldn't put it on, I'm thinking of this now from the producer's perspective, is that they just felt that it wasn't up to par with the rest of the material. Because, I mean, let's face it, for 2019, I have to say that From a Page is probably one of my favorite releases from this year.
Yeah.
So it's that good a material. So for it to be on the same level, it had to be done pretty well. And like I said, I'm thinking that maybe they just didn't feel that it was of the same quality or the same caliber. Maybe they just hadn't finished, you know, updating it or adding to it to make it more Yes-like. But in any case, I'm guessing that they just felt that it wasn't on the same level.
Yeah, yeah. And that's right. And yeah, as to Daniel's specific question, could it have gone on this new album? I'm not sure. Certainly, I've never heard a proper recording of it. Maybe there is a proper live recording because, you know, from 2008 and 2009, we're talking about those performances. You know, many of those shows may well have been recorded and gone into people's personal archives. I know Steve Howe tends to record quite a lot of the concerts and keeps those tapes himself. So there may be a decent recording which could have been scrubbed up. But, you know, you're in danger of getting into Keys from Ascension territory, aren't you, with mixing live and studio tracks?
Yeah, a lot of bands have been not looked upon favorably when that kind of stuff happens. I mean, you think of Kiss or Judas Priest or many bands who have claimed to have released live albums and then find out years later that the only thing that's live on it is just the audience and maybe like one aspect of it and everything else has been replaced in the studio. So, I just think that having a live version of that song in amongst those fantastically recorded studio tracks would have been a bit jarring, I think. And especially if you started the EP with that and then gone to the studio tracks, it would have been a very obvious difference in, like, you know, how the audio would be sound wise I think, and to put it in somewhere in the middle would have been really just strange. So I think it would have been better if they just did a studio version of it and included it, but then again, it goes back to our original comment, was it good enough to be placed in amongst it?
Yes. Well, I agree with you. Certainly by the time it made it onto that Squacket album, it sounds great. And, you know, I was particularly loved some of those Hackett soaring guitar lines and so on that did sound quite Yes-y, I have to say. I could almost see Steve Howe coming up with the same kind of stuff. So, yeah, thank you very much indeed, Daniel, for sending that in. That was a really, really good one, an interesting one. And an update, I do hope, from Oliver himself as soon as he gets back to me about it. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
Hello, this is Patrick Moraz, and you are listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
So just before we go, here's the Patreon update, or half of it. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. And Yes Music Podcast patrons are Aaron Steelman, Bob Martellotta, Brian Sullivan, Chris Bandini, Craig Estenes, Dave Owen, David Hayden, Lind, David Pannell, Dave Watkinson, Dem, Doug Curran, Fergus Cubbage, Fred Barringer, Jeff Bailey, Jeffrey Mason, Guy de Rome, Henrik Antonsen, H.B. Peterson, Ian M.B., Jamie McQuinn, Ken Fuller, Jeremy North, Jim, John Cowan, John Holden, John Parry, John Thompson, and Barry Gorski. Continued thanks to Robert and David, of course. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them to support the show financially each month, then please do head over to patreon.com, yesmusicpodcast, or just click the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. Next week, we'll be reviewing XYZ and Run with the Fox. But in the meantime, please do keep getting involved on Facebook, on Twitter, or on Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.